We're just cranking out the episodes this week on Pittsburgh Beautiful. Welcome to the Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast. This is our bonus sports episode with David Moyo of Moyo's Musings. He has a couple thoughts on the Steelers preseason so far, the disappearance of Benny Snell, the appearance of Bud Dupree, James Washington, and in the second part of it, how much we love the Pirates. The Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast starts now. Okay, I'm here with Dave Moyo, our sports writer, Moyo's Musings. And if you follow the blog at all, Dave has some thoughts on Steelers camp and some what he likes to call Tomlinisms.
The standard is the standard.
So we're done. We're into week two of the preseason. There have been some interesting developments. There's been a lot of talk about Bud Dupree, who I think on a previous podcast, we talked about how he has the worst name for a linebacker ever.
And probably that he should be put on a bus to Wichita. But right. Now he suddenly emerged as a, let's just couch it by saying, you know, Dupree, I think his play is as important as anybody's on this defense because they're so thin at outside linebacker. So they need production from the starters. They need Dupree to offset and take some of the heat off of TJ Watt. They need Dupree to be an impact player because they're paying him like one. So with all that combined, you need Dupree to be good. And he hasn't been, not even close to good. But, you know, first two preseason games, very encouraging. He had a 3-sack game, maybe a 4-sack game. I think they gave him credit for another one. So it's kind of like the Gretzky assist. If Gretzky was on the ice, it doesn't matter who scored or how they scored. The freaking goalie could have scored, you know, by kicking the puck into the net, the length of the ice, and Gretzky would have gotten an assist. That's the way I think it might have been with Dupree's 4th sack. But whatever, we'll take it. He's played very well, and that's encouraging to see. James Washington, very encouraging to see. Now, he was Mr. August last year when he had a great preseason, and that didn't translate into much. There's a bit of revisionist history that's always done with sports, and I think people forget that Antonio Brown's first season with the Steelers, he caught 16 passes. Now, he made two really important catches in playoff games, but his rookie season wasn't anything to write home about. Washington, I thought, came on at the end of last year and played very well.
Yeah.
And he has all of the makings of a decent wide receiver. So here's hoping that that James Washington's first couple of preseason games are a precursor of what's to come. But again, you got to weigh it against the fact that he's playing against secondary guys that might not even be in the league anymore come week one. But still, you can see the talent is there. You can see that his pedigree is real. Will he be able to now produce at a high level? Let's hope.
Well, you're talking about two dramatically different situations. I mean, Dupree was drafted 4 or 5 years ago with the hope that he would be the next great linebacker in Pittsburgh. And by now, you would have expected the game to slow down enough and him to be able to read or read offenses and formations. And so far, he just hasn't done that. So for me, you know, Dupree is something that I don't really care what he does in the preseason. I've got nothing to say about that. Yeah. It's what happens when he's playing against that first team offense. Yeah. How many reps is he going to get? How many plays is he going to disrupt? Is he not going to overrun plays the way he has before? Washington is different. Last year was his rookie season. So, you know, you expect to see development from him. He's got a bigger role to play this year. And, you know, yes, you can call him Mr. August. But again, it boils down to by the end of the third game of the season, you're going to know whether or not he's going to be a factor.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, with Washington and any guy going from his rookie year to his second year, that's the biggest year of development for those players. I think what I like out of Washington is this sense that once Antonio Brown left, suddenly there was a big opportunity for some receiver to step up and say, okay, I'm the number two guy. And at least Washington looks like he feels like he belongs on the field and he wants that job. Dante Moncrief didn't do anything to turn any heads in his first preseason game. But again, as I said in the musings, was that jitters? Was that just, you know, Moncrief shaking off some rust?
Well, he's a veteran, so right. He's, you know, I kind of discount that anymore because it's been talked about a lot for the last few years. Preseason really is more of a showcase for people trying to make the team. Teams are so afraid of injury.
Yeah.
They don't want to play anybody. And if you're a veteran and you already know what your abilities are and you're confident in it, you know, I mean, yeah, it looks bad when you fumble a ball on your first reception.
Right.
But I chalk that up to, oh, well.
Yeah.
It's a preseason game. I mean, it, you know, you'd like to think they play hard every down, but the bottom line is they're playing for a paycheck.
Sure.
And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, did I run the right route? Yeah. Did I catch the ball? Yes. I got to, you know, I'm sure they don't feel good about it, but anyway.
Yeah, but our job is to be alarmists and to overreact to everything. So I get to look at Moncrief and say, what the hell, man? I expect more out of you.
Right, right.
You know, at least look like someone who's been on the field before, not some nervous rookie who's afraid to make a mistake in front of the coach. And it was a little unhinging to see that. But at the same time, I totally agree that it is just the preseason and it was just his first action. And I trust that he'll be much better as time wears on here. But, you know, that brings me, the alarmist comment brings me to the Devin Bush idea, which is when he was drafted, it was like, okay, Ryan Shazier 2.0, a speedy, undersized linebacker with great athleticism who can make a lot of plays in the middle that other guys might not be able to make, but will he be able to endure the punishment of an NFL season? Shazier was repeatedly injured throughout his career. Everybody kind of forgets that this spinal injury he suffered, that wasn't his first go around missing football. Shazier had spent time on the injured list before. He was dinged up more than often at times in his career. And questions were raised about, it's not his toughness. It's not his strength. Of course, these are incredible athletes, perfectly conditioned. And of course, they're tough. Forget that. It's, are you big enough to get hit repeatedly by gigantic people and survive? And, you know, when Bush was drafted, I was happy they drafted him. I think it was the right pick, but that question nags me. Is he big enough to survive the inside linebacking position in the NFL? And I think he is, but time will tell.
Well, and the question is, if you draft somebody for quickness and speed and they're a ball hawk and they're, you know, they're always in the play.
Right.
They always have the option to bulk up and try to get bigger to maybe absorb some of those blows. But then does that ultimately take away from the reason you drafted them?
Correct.
And do they become mediocre? And
really
the jury's out on any rookie when they come in. So I think you bring up a good point. I'd like to think that the shoulder soreness, you know how they spin injuries.
Of course.
Now. Yeah. So I'd like to think that was more most likely, I'm just really sore.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care what level you play on or how good you are. When you make the jump from college or amateur sports into professional, it's a whole other world.
Right.
Unless you're Lawrence Taylor, you are just not going to have a very good time the first year. So.
And Tomlin downplayed it and you know, alluded to if this were a game that meant anything, he'd have been on the field. So, you know, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure this is as minor as a football injury can be. And as you suggested, probably more of just, I'm a little bit sore, but you know, my mind always goes to the cumulative effect of being hit over and over or hitting over and over. You know, I just think a bigger frame handles that a little better. We'll see with Bush, but, you know, the Steelers are right to be cautious. They're right to hold them out of that game. That is a desperate need for them at that position. So you can't roll the dice and not have him ready for New England week one. He has to be on the field. And if he's not, and you're out there with Matakevich and Vince Williams or whoever they signed, whose name is escaping me right now, you're in a little bit of trouble. Vince Williams, a nice guy, I'm sure, but you know, he's Vince Williams.
You always say that about these athletes. You know, they're a nice guy. I think you're just afraid that they'll come beat you up or something if you.
Yeah, did you ever see Vince Williams? He'll kill me. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But
he's a real nice guy. Don't get me wrong. But
as he's beating me, I want him to acknowledge that I'm right about him being an average NFL linebacker.
Right.
Which is what he is. That's not a criticism of him. He is what he is. And he can stop the run a little bit against the pass. He's a liability. And the Steelers gave up a lot of huge plays right in the middle of the football field. And that's where old Vince patrols.
Well, you got Bush. Right.
I'm not going to run across the middle against him. But the guys who do don't seem to be afraid of Vince Williams' presence.
So. Right. So what do you make of the fact that a lot of people are talking about Benny Snell and how he's kind of disappeared?
Yeah.
Do you think that's maybe a result of the fact that they have, I guess you could call it a little bit of depth at line or at running back?
Yeah. And I think it's a little bit of depth. I mean, I think you've got Connor and Samuels. You have Connor with an injury history who really scares me. Again, it's the Devin Bush theory with me of, is Connor going to be able to endure 16 games of football?
I wonder if his, because he's not the smallest guy out there.
No.
I wonder if a little bit of his injury issues come from the fact that he had to fight cancer. That takes a toll physically on your body.
And, you know, when he was at Pitt, he started as a defensive lineman.
Okay.
He had to basically change his whole body type to become an elite running back. So for that to happen, you wonder also, does that take a toll on the body at all? And does that affect you physically? I don't know. Just play a doctor on TV. But I think the depth issue, it's a little bit of a facade. I think after Samuels, you kind of have nothing there. Rosie Nix has to be on the football team. He's too good at on special teams. He is valuable in certain short yardage situations, a devastating lead blocker. So you have to have him. That presents a problem for people like Benny Snell, who was very impressive the first week. A lot of people were raving about him out of minicamp and into the first week of training camp. And then you're right. The games started and he disappeared. And he looks slow. He looks very uncertain. He doesn't exactly hit the hole that hard with any real speed. And in the NFL, man, if you're not fast, you're just done. And there are guys that don't run great 40s, but their game speed is very fast. He doesn't appear to be. I think James Conner is one of those guys whose game speed is better than his actual foot speed. He seems to explode through the hole. When he finds an opening, he hits it hard. He can outrun a guy or two to get to the edge. So Connor's got that sort of extra gear in a game, and Snell hasn't shown that. I think he's in big trouble.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I guess we'll see. The next preseason game is Sunday. I think Ben's supposed to play.
Which I
maybe
wouldn't play
a series.
Why play him?
I don't know. I'm on the fence about that kind of stuff because, you know, we always talk about the old days and things change. That's just the nature of the game, of anything. But, you know, I still believe that no matter what kind of athlete you are, if you're going to warm up to play on the stage, you know, you do need to warm up. And so many of the last few years, that's been one of the knocks on not just Roethlisberger, but a lot of the quarterbacks around the league that don't play at all in preseason because they don't want them to get injured. But then they come out of the gate really slow because practice is not game speed.
No
and
doubt.
The bottom line is they're all human. So they're going to slow down. They need that time. So I'm kind of a fan of letting your starting quarterback play a couple series in the preseason. And you know, remember back in the old days, they would play the whole first half of the last preseason game.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Sometimes the whole game. I went to I'll never forget going to it was Chuck Knoll's last year.
Yeah.
And Phil Simms was still the starting quarterback for the Giants. He played the entire fourth preseason game, the entire game. And for the Steelers, Neil O'Donnell played the entire game. These are the starting quarterbacks. And the game went into overtime. And, you know, if I ran the NFL, there would be no such thing as preseason overtime. If the game ends in a tie,
yeah.
The game's over.
No reason for that. Right.
No reason for that. You know, I would do things a little differently, but that game went into overtime, and there are Phil Simms and Neil O'Donnell leading their teams, and it was just stunning to watch.
Yeah, well, that was Bill Parcells. Was Bill Parcells still the coach?
Yeah. Parcells was still there. Yeah.
So you're talking about two old school guys,
exactly.
Chuck Noll and Bill Parcells.
Right.
You know, this is how you get ready for the season. You play in the preseason. So, I think it's going to be an interesting year. I see how the Steelers are kind of picked to they're the favorite right now, which I think is appropriate. I mean, if you think about it, Cleveland, doesn't matter what people say about Cleveland. They've got a lot of talent on that team now, but you have to have a lot of every football team, good or bad, in the NFL has a lot of talent.
Absolutely.
They just seem to have a lot more talent than they normally do.
Yeah.
That doesn't translate into anything.
Not yet.
Until you start putting W's up on the board.
Right. And so, like I said in the musings, I want them to be good.
Because you want the games to mean something.
I like that rivalry. I love the Steelers-Brown rivalry. So I want the games to mean something.
Well, what you don't want is a crappy Browns team to tie the Steelers on opening day.
Right.
If it was a great Browns team and they tied them,
then you'd
feel a little better.
We fought them hard.
Right.
We played them hard. And Baker Mayfield spouting off and popping off and making the comments he makes. And I love that. Let the guy go. Let him be a punk. I don't care. It makes it more satisfying if you beat him. And especially if you can rough him up a little bit while you're beating him. You know, maybe TJ Watt gets a shot at him. And not that you want to see the guy get hurt. But
that's why you play the game.
Light him up a little bit. And, you know, welcome to the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's a great talent, but
I think Cleveland amounts to, if I was to guess, Cleveland, a 7 or 8 win season for Cleveland this year would be a major victory.
Yeah.
I mean, they won 6 games last year.
Yeah. They won
either
6.
Either 6 or 7.
5
or 6.
Yeah. It was 6 or 7.
Which was huge because the year before they didn't win anything. So,
So
for Cleveland to make that leap into 7 games or possibly 500, now you can start talking to me about we're getting better.
Yeah.
Until that happens, I mean, you're talking about a sophomore quarterback who, like you said, you know, he looked good against the bad teams and disappeared against the good teams.
Yep, absolutely.
But you would expect that of a rookie.
Absolutely.
You know, what was Peyton Manning his first year? 1-15,
threw, you know, almost a record number of interceptions.
Right. So every good quarterback needs to learn.
Sure.
So Cincinnati, I think, is just horrible.
Yeah, I agree. Take them out with the trash. I don't see an improvement there. I don't think they improve the roster very much.
No.
They have a couple of players that might take the next step.
They made a coaching change, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have Tyler Boyd out of Clairton, who is going to be a very good NFL receiver for a while. And you know, a lot of people talk up A.J. Green, and I just look around and I think, what has he ever done? He catches some passes. He makes some plays. He's a big, fast receiver. But he really never impacts a game, like, to the point where you're like, there's a difference maker who's going to help that team get to the next level. And then when they have made the playoffs in the past, what's A.J. Green
now? He disappears.
Totally.
And then you've got John Harbaugh talking about, you know, Lamar Jackson as if he's the second coming of Randall Cunningham.
Yeah, or anything besides what he is.
Right, which remains to be seen.
Right.
So far, it looks like he's a quarterback that can run around.
Run around, and he has an average NFL arm.
Yeah.
We'll see what he does.
But the Ravens always seem to – their coaching is pretty good. They always seem to kind of rise to the occasion.
Yeah. So they won the division last year out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They won the division.
Well, they won the division because I think that the Steelers last year lost.
Oh, yeah. No question.
The Ravens didn't win.
No question. No question.
But they have a chip on their shoulder, and
they're
a similar franchise. Yeah. So, I think actually, I think, to be honest with you, I think the division is pretty much wide open if you think about it.
Yeah.
One injury on the Steelers,
sure.
One key injury, and
yeah.
You can kiss the season goodbye
yeah.
because the defense has so many questions.
Yeah.
You have to expect that the defense is going to be average.
Yeah,
and
which I do expect.
If they're better than average, that's good.
Yeah.
But you get one guy like Juju or even James Washington or, you know, God forbid Roethlisberger goes
yeah,
down.
It's over.
And you're, yeah, it's over. And
yeah.
I think that applies to every team.
Yeah. I totally, especially teams with elite quarterbacks. If the quarterback goes down, that team is pretty much done.
Yeah.
It's really hard to come back from that. You know, unless you're the Eagles who win Super Bowls with backup quarterbacks.
I don't even want to talk about the
yeah,
Eagles.
No,
they're like my least favorite football team of all
course.
Time.
Well, yeah. It's because you have a brain.
Yeah.
The Browns are mine. They yeah. always will be. But the Eagles,
yeah.
anything Philadelphia.
Up there.
Is
I know. We've had
very,
yeah, the
very
Flyers,
close second.
Right.
Right.
Plane could go down.
Yes.
Party.
Oh,
yeah.
Did I say
so,
that?
Yeah. No, but I said that.
Okay.
But you were thinking it. You
I,
were
I
thinking
was,
it.
Yeah.
We'll hear more after a short break. So you were absolutely right about the Pirates.
Yeah.
You know, here we are after the horrific situation, which was the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Huntington makes – I mean, look, I'm not the kind of guy that criticizes what GMs say or coaches say unless it's ridiculously stupid. And in this case, the things that he said last week – did blow my mind. And I generally don't even pay attention. Look, you
yeah.
know, baseball, you get paid a lot of money to put the team together. You know, whatever you're going to say, you're going to say. You always
yeah.
have to be a cheerleader.
Yeah,
you always have to look up. If things get really bad, the good ones say things are really bad. This guy comes out and says there's reason to celebrate. And,
oh, I know.
And everybody goes crazy.
And this reminds me of 2012.
Yeah. The trajectory.
Me, where's your McCutcheon?
Yeah.
Where's your where is anything that gives you hope?
It's not
where's
even close.
Where's your Garrett Cole coming up through the system?
Yeah, it's not even close.
They're not even close to 2012.
And your prediction was spot on because you know, now as you said in your post, now we're sitting here watching Starling Marte and Vasquez win games, win
right.
one every four games
right.
for the Pirates. And, you know, and it does them a disservice.
Yes.
They're playing well.
Right.
And at least, you know, here and there. And they could be on a contender.
Shouldn't Starling Marte's game last night have been for the Yankees or for
somebody.
For the Tampa Rays or
yeah.
somebody in the race, somebody exciting and who his contributions would matter for. Are they going to matter next year? No. Marte is dead in the water. And I'm not the biggest Marte fan, A, for the steroids, B, because he just totally disappears mentally sometimes. But boy, is he having a good season. Like, he's really playing well. He might be the best center fielder in baseball this year.
Yeah,
that's how well he's played.
Right.
And you can't take that away from him. But at the same time, who cares?
Yeah, nobody
you know,
cares.
Now, when McCutcheon was the best center fielder in baseball in 2012 on a terrible team, there was still something, there was some momentum behind the Pirates. There was this young nucleus of Alvarez and Walker and Garrett Cole and these guys who you looked at and thought, yeah, maybe with a couple of pieces. And then suddenly you add Russell Martin to the mix. And you add A.J. Burnett. And
right. They had the
changes.
Makings of a pitching
and Lariano. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that to me was – that was really an asinine comment.
Oh, it was so foolish.
Yeah. It was actually a comment of either somebody who is afraid they're going to lose their job
right.
and wants to spin it for the owners – or knows damn well that they are not going anywhere,
yeah.
which is really what I think is happening.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I look at a team like the Baltimore Orioles, and I've made the comment in the past that, you know, Pirates fans should be grateful for something. I mean, I get it. Mediocrity for 30 years
yeah.
with a basic, you know, here we go. Maybe we'll be in the playoffs
right.
this year and a little bit of hope. That sucks. But at least you're not going to stare 100 losses for at least 2 years in a row, if not three or four,
yeah.
you know, blah, blah, blah. No chance. Well, now they're there. It's
yeah.
almost like it was engineered
I
on
know.
Purpose to get them there.
Yeah.
And it's just so it's mind blowing to figure out. I mean,
yeah,
like I struggle for the words to like, you can write off next season right now. And when can you say that about anybody?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's done. Next season is over.
It's over when you look at the structure of things and you think, okay, Mitch Keller, well, he looks terrible.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, name anybody on that staff.
Right, exactly.
Let's just call it for what it is. As far as the pitching staff goes, from talent wise, major league talent wise, they suck.
Oh, they do.
They suck.
They're one of the worst starting rotations in baseball.
Yeah, and they're not going to spend the money.
No, they're not.
And they're not going to spend the money to bring in good players. And they don't have a farm system that is constantly throwing good guys up.
Right.
Somebody brought it up on the Fan. I think, you know, where is this Dominican baseball school? What have they produced?
Yeah, the one that they traded Corey Dickerson to get a few extra dollars for the Dominican Academy or whatever it is that hasn't produced anybody. But I think maybe Polanco came through that.
Right.
And,
whatever. That means hasn't produced anybody.
Right. Yeah.
So I agree. It's almost like they have 30 plus games left to go.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the season isn't even
irrelevant. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Right.
It's, you know, I saw highlights from an Orioles game, the other night, and it was a crime because that stadium, Camden Yards, which is the stadium that launched this new renaissance of stadiums,
right?
And hell, that stadium was opened in 1991, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But place was practically empty.
Yeah,
literally practically empty.
10,000 last night at the Buccos game,
and we're headed that direction at PNC, which is really a shame.
And you know, it's embarrassing. But that's what has to happen repeatedly now.
Yeah.
It has to be a disillusionment from the fan base that says, you don't have our money anymore. Otherwise, people who only seem to care about money aren't going to notice, oh, every dollar is going away. All of our revenue streams are going away. People aren't buying tickets. They aren't buying merchandise. They aren't investing in the MLB network and however they count the money, you know, what percentage of this are Pirates fans, that's not there anymore. Until that all starts to go away and dry up, nobody in that organization is going to pay much attention. And you're going to get comments from Neil Huntington like, oh, this reminds me of 2012, fans, you idiots.
Let's throw a party.
Right.
All right. Well, listen, that's some good stuff. I'm still so perplexed about the Pirate situation, I can't even think about what to say now. But but I have a feeling this is going to be it for the Pirates for us this year, because football's starting and that's exciting.
Right.
And of course, the Penguin season is, believe it or not, it's right around the corner.
A few weeks
October.
Away. Yeah. Yeah, a few weeks away.
And so we got some exciting stuff there. But what's even more exciting is fantasy football is coming up. So I think maybe the next sports Pittsburgh Beautiful Sports podcast, or we got to come up with a good name for it. But
yeah,
I think maybe what we should do is go over some fantasy picks. That's what we'll do.
And how about guess who has the first pick in his fantasy draft?
You do too.
Yes.
I do too.
Well, we'll have to slot
we'll do that. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Indeed.
And make sure you check out the musings on PittsburghBeautiful.com. Stay real. As always, it's a pleasure speaking with Dave about his thoughts on the Pirates, the Penguins, the Steelers, and anything else sports related. We always have a good time. Be sure you go to PittsburghBeautiful.com, check out his latest blog post, The State of the Hourglass, the Steelers Camp, and the Pirates. Once again, thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast. Stay real. The Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast is produced by me, Chris Klein, the founder of Pittsburgh Beautiful. The opinions of our guests are not necessarily the opinions of Pittsburgh Beautiful and are their own opinions. All of our guests have been invited to be on the podcast and are not paid for their appearance. Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast. Stay real.